Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing essential habits for financial success.
Right, Joel. You know, this is going to be a great episode, in particular, a great episode to follow up our conversation that we had on Monday with economist Katie Milkman. During that convo, she dived into the science behind why it is that there are certain decisions, certain changes that we're able to make that we stick with, and why there are other changes that we make, and when the first bump in the road comes along, we just immediately fall off that wagon.
Throw in the towel.
Exactly. But the fact is, when it comes to some of the larger financial goals that we have in our lives, there aren't a lot of folks that have like this grand 10-year plan. They're like, I don't know. Like, I don't even know what I want to do by the end of this year, let alone at the end of 10 years.
Yeah.
But they do know that they need to make some healthy changes in their lives when it comes to how it is that they handle their money. They don't know exactly where they want to go, but they know they need to start taking some positive steps, yeah. You know? And this is exactly where this episode comes in. This episode is especially for the folks who are saying, like, just tell me what to do. Like, I don't exactly know what it is I'm pursuing. Like, the big things are going to bring about happiness in my life. But I do know I need to be smarter with my money. Tell me what I need to do. I think this episode is definitely going to connect with those folks, but just for everyone out there who is looking to get better with their money as well.
Yeah, they might not have like a big, hairy, audacious goal of achieving FIRE by the time they're 33 or something like that. But it doesn't mean that they don't want to make progress and leave themselves more options. And so, yeah, we think these habits, implementing some of these habits that we're going to talk about today, are going to help put you on the right path, even if you don't know where that path is going to lead.
Exactly.
But before we get to that, Matt, I wanted to mention something that one of our listeners told us about the other day via email. Thanks to listener Nate, by the way.
Yeah, a listener who has some inside knowledge when it comes to how the insurance industry works.
Yeah, and so he is an independent insurance agent himself. And you and I, we've talked about how great independent insurance agents can be for individual consumers, because they're not beholden to a specific company. And so instead of saying like, yeah, let me quote you prices from Progressive only or Allstate only or whatever it might be, they say, no, I have the ability to shop with 8 or 9 companies on your behalf, and I'll tell you what the best prices are, which I think is super valuable.
Including a bunch of companies you've never heard of, because they don't put any money towards marketing. And they're also able to offer sometimes the best rates.
Yeah, they don't have a cute green gecko or something like that, which means they can offer you better rates sometimes because they're not spending so much on marketing. Exactly. And the website that Nate mentioned, I'd not heard of this website before. We've talked about finding an independent local insurance agent, but he mentioned the site trustedchoice.com, which is a great site for finding a local agent where you are. So if you're like, hey, one of my goals this year is to save money on insurance, I know like my insurance costs just went up big time, how am I going to be able to lower that cost in a meaningful way? Well, one of the easiest ways to do that is to find a local independent agent. And so, yeah, we will link to that site in the show notes for this episode. But finding a local agent, having them shop on your behalf is one of the easy things that you can do to potentially save hundreds or maybe even $1,000 or more in the coming year on insurance costs.
Most definitely.
Without giving up a ton in coverage in order to do so,
too. Exactly. That's where we don't want you to cut corners in order to save. There are other ways. And one of the reasons he pointed out, too, local agents, oftentimes they know the specific nuances and the laws associated with the state where you live.
Mm-hmm.
And so they oftentimes can provide better coverage because they know exactly what it is that you are going to be required to have, but then also what you don't necessarily need to have.
Yes.
And
they'll probably ask more about your specific situation sometimes.
Exactly.
And I think that's helpful.
Totally. All right, let's introduce the beer that you and I are going to enjoy during this episode. This is a liquid hop Magma. This is our last beer donated to the show by Mutation Brewing. A big thanks to Jack and all of our friends over there at the brewery, but I'm looking forward to enjoying this one, and we will share what we think about it at the end of the episode.
For sure. We like hoppy beers. We'll give our thoughts on this one in just a bit. But Matt, let's get onto the subject at hand. Let's talk about the essential habits for financial success. And it just makes me think of high school for some reason. That, like, remember we were always told
back to school essentials.
Right, Remember, well, kids are going back to school for the second semester in just a couple days. But like in high school, we were always told that we needed to get good grades. But it always felt a little arbitrary to me. Like, nobody was connecting the dots. And so I personally was more than happy to trade, like, hours of studying for a solid B instead of, like, busting my butt to get an A. It always felt like the gap in effort needed between getting a B and an A was significant. So I was just always content to get a slightly lower grade, but it was still solid, right? And I think I chalked it up to the fact that I had no desire to attend a prestigious school. Like, the Ivy Leagues were out of the question for me.
No Yale for Joel, little high school Joel.
No, I wasn't thinking about Yale or Harvard or Stanford or any of that stuff. But it turns out, though, I think there were good reasons that my parents were pushing me to try harder, even though I wasn't planning on going to Colgate or one of those nice schools, right? And better grades meant a wider range of options. And the potential for more financial aid, too, no matter what school I went to. It makes me think, recently, I was talking to my wife, Emily, one of her cousins, and he told me about getting a 32 on his ACT. He took it three times, and he just couldn't get past that mark. But if he'd gotten a 33, he would have gotten all his housing paid for at the school he went to.
Snap.
So it's just like, one point, man, cost him a lot of money. Mm. But he said, man, I couldn't stomach taking that test again at that point in time. And I don't think he realized at the time when he was 18 how much it was going to cost him. And so both his parents and my parents, I think, could see past our lethargy, my, you know, lack of focus and dedication, and his lack of wanting to take that test again. And they knew that trying just a bit harder would have long-term positive financial consequences for both of us, not to mention a stronger work ethic, right, that would provide dividends for years to come. So
yeah, your parents wanted to see your full potential, Joel. They knew that you were capable of so much more.
Yes.
But what you're saying, though, is, like, I mean, you're not just going to focus on getting good grades because you know that you have to achieve a certain GPA to get into a specific school. Like, that is not the only reason that you're doing it. And, you know, when it comes to, like, the big financial goals that we have in life, it can be overwhelming. You know, like, when you hear life gurus out there saying that, like, you've got to start with the end in mind. And I'm pretty sure that that's something we've even said before, even though we don't at all consider ourselves gurus. And the reason, though, that can be overwhelming, I think, is because sometimes you just have no idea what end it is that you're actually pursuing. And plus, you know, we think this is also a great way to tackle the new year because, you know, you may not even know what you want to accomplish by the end of 2023, let alone by the end of the decade. You might not have a specific crystallized goal yet, and that's okay. But it's about moving in the right direction. It's about getting that momentum started, getting that ball rolling, even if the end goal is subject to change. And so just like with you, Joel, you didn't know exactly where it was that you wanted to go to college, but by having a good GPA, by giving it your best shot on the SAT, that was going to open up the potential for you to go to some different schools that you might have changed your mind to down the road.
Yeah.
And developing the right financial habits, we think that will similarly help folks to start moving in the right direction, even if you don't know what your ultimate destination is going to be.
Yeah, and the truth is that most of us have goals that are subject to change, right? None of our goals very few of our goals are set in stone. Like, this is, and we know them on, like, a multi-decade long timeline. And life throws us curveballs and we have to adapt. That doesn't necessarily mean that you've failed, right? It's often that as you grow up and evolve as a person, that what you want out of life changes, which is totally fine and totally understandable. And it's actually a good thing. What it feels like we live a new life, something like every 7 years, we're turning over a new leaf, Matt. There are certain things that people might've told me 3 years ago, but pre-pandemic, and they would have said, hey, you're going to end up doing this, this, and this, making these choices. You're even going to move from the neighborhood that you love so much right now, and you're going to end up in a new place. And I would have been like, you're crazy. Like, there's no way.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah. But life.
And here we are.
Throws us curveballs. We have to react accordingly. And you and I, we moved our families, right, last year. But we want you to have the financial ability to be able to make those changes without freaking out. And the earlier you adopt the financial habits that we're going to cover in today's episode, the quicker you're going to be on your way to increased levels of margin and financial flexibility, which directly equates to the likelihood that money isn't going to be the thing holding you back from the lifestyle you want to lead and the changes you want to make. Matt, it would have been so much more stressful if we felt like we wanted to move our family somewhere else, but we didn't have the financial backstop to make that decision.
Exactly.
Right? And so that's what we want for people. Like, as goals start to crystallize, you're like, hey, the habits I've been implementing are, you know, have gotten me to the place where I can now achieve that without having to fret, without having to like freak out that you don't have the financial wherewithal to make those decisions you want to make.
That's right, man. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So let's get into it. Where do you start? And we would argue that gathering the facts, that is step number one. And that means tracking your spending. We think that this is the number one habit that folks who handle their money do without fail. Last month, actually, we talked about how people underestimate what it is that they spend on their monthly subscriptions. And not just by like a little bit of money. Like almost always, it was by at least $100. And so the reason I bring that up is because if you don't know where your money is going, it becomes really easy to let those precious dollars slip through the cracks. And that makes it harder to actually reach whatever goals it is that you are either currently pursuing or that you might end up pursuing at some point. Every dollar counts when we're looking to make changes. And if you don't track where those dollars are going, it's like you're on a ship with a perpetual leak. You got to fix that leak in order to get where you're trying to go. It makes me think of the conversation we had with Katie on Monday. One of the things she wrote about in her book, one of the similarities between Benjamin Franklin and Jerry Seinfeld was that they were incredibly disciplined in tracking their progress. There were changes that they both, I would say probably very different changes that they both wanted to implement in their lives. And they were both able to basically chart their progress, and that allowed them to achieve their results much faster. And specific to Jerry Seinfeld, one of the things she said that he would often do is that he would maintain these streaks. And so I think maybe it was something like every night he was trying to do an open mic night somewhere in order to just hone his craft. And once he got that going, he didn't want to stop, specifically because he didn't want to break the streak that he had going. Like, in a sense, he was almost kind of gamifying it. And when I read that, I realized that's one of the reasons why I track my spending every single penny, every single month. And I've done that since 2007. Like, literally, I'm on like a 15-year streak where every single month that is something I've been able to maintain. There's no way I'm going to break that streak. I'm not going to let a busy month allow me to not do this thing that I've done for so long that has allowed me to achieve the financial progress and the financial success that I have.
And you're living up now to the moniker that everyone has for you, which is the Jerry Seinfeld of personal finance.
Oh, if only that was my moniker. I would love that.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think those things matter, right? And the longer we do something, the more habitual it becomes. But something as simple as tracking your money is crucial. Like, it's like the first building block, really, of personal finance in so many ways. And if you're not doing that basic thing, the likelihood of you being able to achieve bigger goals that you've set out for yourself becomes a lot more unlikely if you're not willing to do the small stuff, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, that's worth sharing too, because I think folks are saying, oh, great, the How to Money guys, they're talking about tracking your spending. But like, this is something that folks who have accomplished a lot in their lifetimes, this is what they do. This is where you start.
Yeah. And it sounds basic, but the reality is most people don't do it. And so they don't know where the leaks are. They don't know how to go about plugging them. And the truth is there are lots of ways to track, right? You can go old school spreadsheet like you do, Matt, and we can link to your budget spreadsheet that people can copy and use however they'd like in the show notes for this episode. If you're like, hey, I do like the Matt's grandpa approach to budgeting and to tracking, that's cool. Feel free, go use it. Or you can use a software like Mint or YNAB. If you're like, I'm hip, I'm with it, then go for that. Like, sign up for one of those sites. Mint's free. YNAB costs money. But whatever system works best for you is all good with us. But if you opt to avoid tracking your spending, your progress is just, it's going to be stunted. Just like if Jerry Seinfeld wasn't, if he wasn't tracking those open mic nights and he's like, I think I've done it like the last 13 days, but I'm not 100% sure. There's something about, yeah, documenting it that helps keep that progress alive. And then the next step after tracking is budgeting. And once you know, you know where those funds are going, it's so much easier to then tweak your spending to better align with your values. And you start asking questions like, do my current expenses make sense for what I care about? How do I feel about the money that I'm spending? Do I feel good about it? And if not, it's time to redirect where those dollars are going. And again, like, there are, you know, excellent software packages to help you out with this, but you don't need software to help you do this either. Like pen and paper, right? It can be as simple as that. But yeah, tracking and budgeting are like two unavoidable peas in a pod. If you're doing those things consistently, we actually, we have a new article up on our website at howtomoney.com. There's like different budgeting methods, I think, that work better for different personality types.
Right.
And so we'll link to that. So you can hopefully find a budgeting method that works for you, how you think about money, and then kind of like, yeah, how you personally handle it. It's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be a one size fits all approach.
That's right. And I will say, I'll give a slight caveat, because I said that this is something that everybody who's successful with their money, this is something that they do. And while I think it would be helpful for the majority of folks, I will say there are folks out there who don't budget as much. I mean, I think you would even kind of fall into that camp a little bit.
That's actually the fourth budgeting style in that article I'm referencing is people who don't budget. But
they're like, my favorite budgeting style is to not budget. But what I wanted to say, though, is I think initially it is incredibly helpful.
Yes.
Like, maybe in the day-to-day, like the month-to-month, you're not doing like a zero-sum budget where you're tracking every single penny.
Which is one of the other ones in the article.
Yeah, but I think initially, at least at the very beginning, like you got to face the facts. You know, like you got to face the music and be shocked with the reality of your spending. Because you might think that you've got a certain level of spending, you know, going on in your life. But guess what? Lifestyle inflation happens in conjunction with actual inflation, which has caused a lot of our spending to increase. And so I think it's so important to truly face the facts. And at the very least, doing that once at the beginning can help you to get sort of like a, almost like a tune-up. Like when you go in, you take your car in, if you take it to somebody who knows what they're doing, they're hopefully able to give you a good diagnosis. And I think that
they can
is
even tell
what
you
a budget
like
can do.
What's coming up with your car? Like, hey, in maybe a few thousand miles, those front brakes might need to be looked at again. And I don't know, maybe you're going to need that 90,000 mile checkup where we do this.
Prepare for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Start thinking ahead, which is great. And I think that's what kind of tracking and budgeting can do for you.
Absolutely.
But it's also true that somebody like Jerry Seinfeld doesn't need to do an open mic night every single night at this point because of all the work he's put in throughout the years. So
exactly.
If you're that far along, you don't need to necessarily feel guilted into continuing a system that helps set you up for success. And it might continue to help you be successful, but you also might not need it in the same way that somebody who's just starting out does.
I mean, it's trade-offs. Because simultaneously, like even the best coaches out there and the best players, they're watching tape. You know, like they are reviewing and looking back over their performances. And so I think even...
Look at you making a sports reference.
I don't do that often. But I think even the folks who are crushing their financial goals would see an increased level of performance were they to track and budget. It just kind of comes down to whether or not that is enough of a priority for them to want to do that.
I remember seeing a Kobe Bryant interview where he talked about just outworking everybody else. And he's like, let's say the average athlete has two good workouts in a day. Well, what if I wake up earlier in the morning and I'm getting somewhere between 3 and 4 workouts in every single day? He's like, it doesn't matter work their butt off over the summer, because for the last 5 years, I've been doing an additional workout or two more than they have for years now, which compounds. Yeah. And it's like, those are the kind of things, those actions really matter, right? That's a habit that he got into that paid massive dividends, making him one of the best basketball players of all time.
But you gotta let your body rest though too, right? Like, aren't you faced with like the reality of science?
Yeah.
I think that now that I've been working out,
you're asking the wrong guy. The work for Kobe, I'm going to trust it, but
there's certain guys that like work out every single day. I'm just like, how are you not sore the next day? Like when I work out, I feel like I can't do jack squat the next day, but we definitely don't need to turn this into physical fitness sports metaphor of an episode. We're going to continue to talk about the essential habits for financial success. And we have a handful more of different habits that we are going to cover right after this.
Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients.
It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Ka-Chava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Ka-Chava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Ka-Chava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Ka-Chava. Just go to Ka-Chava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Ka-Chava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, Matt, let's keep going. Of course, you and I, we want everybody listening to this, we want them to be financially successful. We want them, and that doesn't mean, and you and I have talked about this all the time, that doesn't mean having like Bill Gates levels of wealth. That doesn't mean being on the Forbes 100 list or something like that. Like, that is uber insanely rich and wealthy. But that, we don't care about that, but we do want people to have more choice in their lives. We do want people to have more money in their bank account to allow them to have more choice over the years.
More autonomy over their lives and the decisions that they're able to make in the future.
And so that often means having better habits, making better choices, even if the end goal isn't, and for most of us, probably isn't going to be, you know, to become one of the uber wealthy elites. But another habit that's successful financial nerds partake in is to regularly assess and cut their spending. And so this kind of aligns with tracking your spending, but it's a little different because this is like when you're actually not just seeing the holes in the boat, but you start plugging the leaks. And you make it a habit, we would say, to institute a waiting period before buying something, something like a 48-hour rule, where you're shopping and you see something and you're like, oh, I need that. Well, if you have a 48-hour rule, you don't buy it. And maybe you forget about it. Or maybe you come back to it knowing, hey, that's actually something I really want to buy. Or if you're shopping around for items that you're definitely going to purchase, you know you want that thing, you've been like thinking about it for a while, compare prices before you actually take the plunge and buy that item and add it into your life as well. Also, you know, work to spend less on recurring expenses. These are all habits that you're going to want to develop in order to grow the gap in your life between incoming and outgoing. So we would say, start with those big expenses, right? Like housing. What are some ways that you can keep this one to a minimum? Do you really need a big fancy apartment for all the stuff you're tired of keeping up with? Or let's say you own a house. Maybe it's time to start house hacking. Can you rent out a room in your house to turn that expense into less of an expense, or maybe even into a little bit of profit? How can you trim what you're spending on transportation? Can you get rid of a car from your life? Matt and I were big advocates for this. If there's a lot more people who could afford to ditch a car than think they can, and the average
price of owning one single car for a whole year is something like $10,000. That's insane. That's a lot of money. Can you cut that back in your life? Also, like shop insurance rates. We talked about that at the beginning of the episode. They're all of these little leaks that are in our lives, these ways that we can address them. But the habit that's important to develop is to regularly assess and cut. Assessing and cutting spending is going to go a long way when it comes to moving the needle, creating more margin, more financial margin in your life.
Yeah, but don't forget about the all those little leaks as well, you know, because like the successful money habits, like saving in small ways, that is also going to propel you down the path of financial success as well.
Now you're starting to sound like Ben Franklin, a penny saved is a penny earned.
You know, I feel like me and Ben Franklin, we would have gotten along. But like, you know, just like the small tweaks that we're able to make, right? Like as we adopt, say, a more positive view of frugality, I think that's the cherry on top as we're working to optimize our money. And these are moves that most anyone out there can do. We're talking about things like biking more often as opposed to getting in the car. Like that's one of the ways that you are able to downsize the second largest line item on the Americans' monthly budget. But then something as simple as saving, storing, and actually eating your leftovers. I'm like the king of leftovers, man.
Yeah, don't just scrape it into the garbage can.
No, like literally today, my leftovers, I had, there's just like too much brown rice in there. And so I ate like the pork and the mushrooms and the spinach, but I scraped the rice back into the container. I stuck that back in the fridge because now I've got leftovers of leftovers. And later this week, I'll be able to bring some vegetables, some protein, and complete that meal. But, you know, even something as basic as reusing Ziploc bags, financially successful folks realize the value of a dollar. And, like, they're just always doing just the little things that add up. And you touched on this a little bit, but, like, finding ways to keep those smaller recurring expenses minimal is important as well, because you're not looking to bring in new expenses into your life just on a whim, right? Because that's how those small expenses really add up when you multiply it times 12.
And you get used, you kind of get used to the action of doing those little things and not thinking a thing of it. And they grow. Like, it's not just the one $10 subscription, but it's the fact that, like,
times
now
12,
you're the kind of person.
However many years that you did that you maintain that subscription, but then just what you're talking about, the frame of mind that you enter into as a consumer.
Yeah, and it's like now, cool. Yeah, that's not, if $10 isn't a big deal, the next time the $20 decision isn't a big deal. And we need to make them big deals in our lives,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, we want you to basically keep those recurring payments as low as possible, because that's going to open up the widest range of financial possibilities for you in the future. And that's what we want for you. And plus, you know, it keeps your stress levels lower, which is massively underrated. We're not even going to talk about stress and mental health. We're just talking about like the nuts and bolts today, but keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, it's like these habits do have a ramification on your mental acuity, right? On the bandwidth that you have to tackle other more important things in life. That's not the focus of this episode, but it's 100% true.
Yeah, it literally lowers your IQ points. It makes you dumber.
Having a lot of debt on hand, right? There's like studies that show that it's something like a 12 to 14 point IQ drop. And we want you to avoid that because we want you to be smart and happy. But another habit that you're going to want to adopt is to avoid high interest rate debt like the plague. And so, yeah, when you take on debt, what you're doing is you're giving your future self fewer options. And so you want to be darn sure that the debt you're taking on is fueling the future you want, not preventing future possibilities. And the problem is most debt sucks, right? Personal loans, revolving credit card debt, car loans, like these are the kind of things that allow you to consume more now, leaving future you, though, on the hook for those payments.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially 7, 8, 9 years in the future when you're talking about something like all those kinds of debt, but specifically like, say, car loans. There's a lot of people taking out 8 and 9 year car loans now, Matt. And so, like, by the time
that's terrible,
you're done with that car,
I hate it.
You're halfway through those car payments, and that's setting you up for the opposite of financial success. And so, savvy financial folks, they make it a habit to avoid all the above debts. They don't want to mess with any of them, and they don't want to play with fire because they don't want to get burned. So we also stress on this show that not all debt is bad. It's possible to use debt wisely to give yourself more options in the future. If we're talking about like a smart mortgage or a reasonable amount of student loans to get a degree that's going to improve your earning potential, those things, you know, those aren't bad versions of debt, but avoiding the worst debts and keeping even the potentially helpful debt in check is a wise habit to get into.
And honestly, another reason too that it's good to avoid debt, and we've talked about this towards the end of last year when we were talking about pursuing happiness in all the wrong ways, we're just poor predictors of what it is that is going to make us happy.
Yeah.
We think that this is going to be something that's going to make us happy. It's going to make us fulfilled. And when those items, oftentimes, that we have to purchase, when we finance them, we are sticking our future selves, like you said, Joel, with those payments. We are, like, I don't trust myself today to make some, like, the right decision on when it comes to taking on debt, oftentimes.
Yeah.
To still be something that I think is going to be worth it down the road. It's I mean, it's why student loans and mortgages are typically the only things that we like to see financed. If there's one thing I feel like I've learned about myself over the years is that I change my mind sometimes. And again, there's I've had this one path in my mind and I think, oh, this is going to make me happier. Oh, this is going to make life easier. But then as time progresses, as I mature, as different events present themselves and the facts on the ground change, well, oftentimes that warrants a change to the game plan as well.
Yeah.
And anytime you are looking to take on any serious amount of debt, we think you should probably think long and hard about bringing that debt into your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the habit of reflexively avoiding debt is a good one to get into.
Sure.
Because it's not that, like we said, occasionally some kinds of debts in small amounts aren't, you know, they're not terrible for you, but kind of not buying into the popular American notion that taking on debt isn't that big of a deal is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where saying no is probably like a good knee-jerk reaction when it comes to taking on debt. So I feel like that we've kind of covered the like the frugal portion of our episode where we're just talking about cutting expenses and saying no to yourself. And but that being said, we're not opposed to splurging occasionally, right? Finding your craft beer equivalent and finding ways to amplify the joy that you receive from certain expenses in your life. But let's move on from expenses and shift our focus to investing, because another habit that financially successful folks implement in their lives is to invest with regularity, right? Like, they don't care much about what the market's doing, with what it did yesterday, what it's doing today, but they want to take advantage of the market's wealth-generating capabilities over time. And so with that in mind, they sock money away with each and every paycheck into an employer-sponsored retirement plan like a 401k, or by contributing without fail to their own retirement account, their individual retirement account, their IRA. And doing that regularly means that they're often opting for the dollar cost averaging approach, which, you know, ensures that you're doing the right thing on repeat, no matter what the current micro trends are going on in the financial world. And so when it comes to the specific types of investments that we want you invested in, we're not talking about single stock investing. We're not talking about crypto. We want to make sure that you're invested in widely diversified, low cost, if not free, index funds that represent the entire market, or something like the S&P 500, which is where like 98% of all of my investing dollars are in different indexes that track the S&P.
Yeah. And I think it's important to make investing a regular habit. And that is what is going to lead to financial success down the road as those dollars compound on top of each other. That's what's going to help you build wealth.
Just like Kobe, it's the small wins constantly over time.
Well, it's going to do a whole lot more. Not that having money in a savings account isn't important, but it's going to do a whole lot more because your money's going to grow at a much more, a much quicker pace being invested in the economy as a whole, as opposed to just sitting there in static savings.
That's right. Yeah, we want to move you beyond being a saver and instead taking those dollars and actually investing.
Yeah, but automating your investments is one of the most surefire ways to actually be able to achieve that success.
Yeah.
And so I like this. Going back to referencing our episode with Katie on Monday, but you're able to take action one time and then you don't really have to think about it again or revisit that choice, really. Like you set it and forget it. And so automation helps us do the right thing without having to continue to decide to do that thing, which I think is really important. And it makes us less reliant on our own discipline. It sets us up for success when we'd otherwise be much more likely to become our own worst enemy. Automation is just crucial on the investing front so that you don't have to, like, habits are great, but a habit that you can set and forget so that you don't have to continually have the willpower to push yourself in the right direction is massively important too.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where setting that percentage of your paycheck that comes out every 2 weeks to go into investments is definitely the easiest way to go about it. But then for all the folks who don't have a work sponsored retirement account, I think one of the best nuggets of advice that Katie was able to give us on Monday based on research is to make it fun. And that, Joel, this is like one of the things, I think this was your big takeaway from that episode.
Yeah.
But find a way to transform something that feels like drudgery or even as like deprivation, right? It's like you're thinking, oh, well, this is money that I'm not able to spend on the fun things here and now. Well, A, remind yourself that this is actually something that you are doing for future you. But there are very small ways that you can make investing that money fun in the here and now, where you are able to take advantage of that sort of immediate gratification that you would realize. And like one of the things that Kate and I do is at the beginning of every single year, that like we don't do dollar cost averaging. We save up the previous year. That way we're able to release those dollars now, basically at the beginning of every single year. And we just did that recently, and we marked the occasion by me going out and buying a extra fancy beer. And that night, after we put the kids down, we cracked that bad boy open. And Kate was just like, okay, why we what's the special occasion? Yeah. And I remind her that like, hey, this is,
we max out this for such account.
This is what we just did. And it's just a very small way just to mark the occasion. But also by associating this fun thing that we do, it's not, again, just this thing that works in the background without us realizing that it's happening. It's something that we are actually enjoying and partaking in the here and now, just via something like a delicious craft beer.
Yeah, I do think that attachment to fun is important. But, and I think it's important to mention too that automation, it doesn't just apply to investing. Like, I think that is one of the best, easiest places to implement automation into your life, but it also applies to paying your bills on time in full as well, right? Because if you have to manually pay your credit card bill every month, there's a chance that you're going to forget, right? Which might incur you penalties and interest. And so for a lot of folks, it's going to be best to set up recurring payments that pay off the statement in full, right? And so the more we automate, the less we have to rely on our flawed selves to make smart decisions. Habits, they're important, but automation is just the best tool for folks who think of themselves as weak-willed, which I do, Matt. I'm the most disciplined guy in the world. I'm certainly no James Clear, who wrote the book Atomic Habits. And
even for the most strong-willed person, there are always going to be times when they fail.
Yeah,
you know? Or you just, like, that's just how it is.
Forget, right? Which happens, which is one of the things we talked about as well on Monday. But while I'm all for cultivating better habits in my life, I'm more than open to taking those easy automation wins wherever I can.
Sure. But with that in mind, I think this is going to sound like the exact opposite of what you just said about automation.
Nothing if not contrarian.
I promise it's not. But we also want you to revisit the things that you've automated, and oftentimes on an annual basis, because we don't want you to over rely on automation. And the reason for that is because, like, mostly so that you can crank up that savings and that investing rate. Right. And so, for instance, going back to the work sponsor retirement account, if you're contributing 3% automatically now and you're not getting the full match, well, we want you to have a plan to raise that in the coming months and in the coming years. And so automation is great, but we just don't want you to completely forget about it to the point that you're never increasing those amounts, that you're never challenging yourself to sock away more for retirement. That being said, there are some 401k providers actually that let you schedule increases in advance as well, which is super cool.
You can automate your automation.
Yeah, exactly. It's got this escalator built in. And so that's the downside of automation on the investing front. But there's the downside when it comes to your expenses as well, because if you have automatic payments, you're also, to a certain extent, you're being insulated from fluctuations that you might see in your bill. And this is
specifically, let's say, on utilities, which is something
exactly.
Like, I still have it set up on automatic payment, but I look at that bill every month because I want to know my usage.
You want to feel that pain.
And I want to feel the pain, even though I'm still auto paying it. I don't just like forget that it exists.
Exactly.
And forget how much I'm spending.
And this is kind of an argument again for tracking and budgeting again, because I too, all of my utilities are set up on auto pay. That way I'm never going to get a late payment, any sort of fee associated with not paying that on time. But because I manually enter all of my expenses into the budget, that allows me again to kind of feel that pain. And because of that, like, this is something I did recently, Joel, like once it started getting cold a few months ago, and I was shocked to see the amount that we're paying when it came to gas, our energy bill. And so since we've been in the new house, I'd never programmed the thermostat. But you know what? Seeing that bill caused me to say, oh, it's time to fit. And partly it's because it's not a Nest thermostat, which makes it so stinking easy to like schedule the week. It's one of the traditional ones where you have to like go to
program it.
Wake up time, leave home, arrive home, sleep, like that whole thing. I hate that. They don't make it easy.
Maybe at some point you replace the thermostats.
But that being said, that caused me to be like, you know what? I'm going to spend a few minutes, figure this stupid thing out. And guess what? The next month's gas bill reflected that change.
There you go. So I like it. Well, okay, so we talked about investing and automation here, but we'd say like another habit that financially successful people partake in is investing in themselves, right? Which that would say that contributes to a whole lot of financial success over time. And this doesn't mean that you've got to fork over like $40,000 or $50,000 for an advanced degree. That doesn't mean you got to go back to school for 3 more years. I mean, that
time for that MBA.
I mean, that might be what you opt to do, and that might be the best choice for you. But we're also talking about spending the time, the energy, and sometimes the cash to grow as a person and to learn the skills that are going to allow you to earn more money. Investing in yourself, it's not just good for your bottom line, but it's also super rewarding, right? At the most basic human level, it feeds your thirst for knowledge and growth. And not to mention, it's fun because it means often making new social connections,
yeah,
which allows you to widen your network. And so we would say make it a habit to find multiple ways each year to grow as a person. And that can be something directly related to your current career or the one that you want, or just embarking on a new hobby, because stretching yourself in new ways is a game changer for us as humans. And this is the habit, this stretching yourself habit and growing yourself and investing in yourself, that we think is something worth continually partaking in.
And plus, I think folks would be surprised too at what I'll call the spillover effect, which is they start participating in, like you said, like maybe a hobby that they think is completely unrelated to their 9-to-5. But then they find there are certain little lessons that they're learning from their new hobby, or there's certain new friendships that are able to be made while they're working out. Like, there are all these additional unexpected indirect ways that ultimately it really can boost your bottom line. Mm-hmm. It really can boost your income over time. But similar to investing in yourself in order to make more money, we think it's also important to prioritize financial education as well. And so, you know, whether that's doing exactly what you're doing right now, which is listening to a personal finance podcast a few times a week, or like just picking up one money book to read each and every quarter of the year. But folks who are successful with their finances are all about regularly upping their knowledge. It's interesting because money is this fascinating space, because it's not like there are a bunch of like new rules. Like there's not a bunch of new things that you need to learn on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, it's not constantly changing or something.
No, yeah. It's kind of like astronomy. It's like maybe every now and then they're going to decide that Pluto is not a planet anymore. and then they'll change it back.
Poor Pluto. I miss it.
But you can go far, you know, just by knowing and practicing the fundamentals. But that doesn't mean that the world of personal finance isn't changing and evolving, in particular, whether that's like the focus on like the behavioral psychology of personal finance. I feel like that's something that's gotten a lot more attention given to it over the past few years. But yeah, continuing education and looking at the different sources of personal finance information out there, it'll allow you to just make some subtle changes that will help you in your progress. So we're doling out all these different sports analogies, Joel, but just like sports go through different phases like this as well.
Yeah.
Like it makes in the NBA, like back in the day, you're looking for these dudes that could freaking dunk the ball. Like, do you go down the lane? Is it go up the lane? Is that how it goes?
In the paint, baby. Yeah.
But like, I know
seven-footers were all the rage, yes, 20 years ago, and now it's more the shooting guard.
You're looking at the guys that can shoot the three-pointers. Well, personal finance also has some similar shifts that we've seen recently. For instance, for years, if you were a saver, it felt like you were totally getting the shaft. But now there are a lot of different places that savers can put their money. And like specifically, I'm thinking about I-bonds, the different high-yield savings accounts that are available to a lot of savers out there, given the high amount of inflation that we are now experiencing.
Yeah, spend less than you earn is like, duh, right? And that's like basic, the most basic of basic personal finance.
Fundamental.
Advice. Yeah, but you're right. As different things change, as inflation soars in one area and not as much in another, like it should influence our habits, how we buy things, and it should influence how we save and where we save and stuff like that too. So you're right. It's like, it's not like generic advice changes, but sometimes the specific actions that we take do need to shift based on what's happening. So
totally,
I think it's a good point. But there are some less tactical habits that are worth implementing as well that are going to help, I think, our listeners in massive ways in the coming years when it comes to achieving their financial goals. Let's get to those. We'll talk about that right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Kachava.com/howtomoney. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, we are back, Joel, and you know we're continuing our discussion on the essential habits for financial success. And so let's kind of keep that gravy train rolling, man. Another thing that financially successful folks do is they hang out with like-minded folks. And not only that, but they also avoid comparing themselves to folks who they don't want to be like. The folks we spend most of our lives with are going to influence us more than we think. We're social beings, and you know what we think of just as normal day-to-day decisions and our worldviews, like they're often a construction of what the four or five people that we're closest to, what it is that they are doing, what it is that they think about those things. And so if our best friends are downsizing their car fleets in order to save money, well, guess what? That's going to influence us in a positive way as well, helping us to curb consumption. But on the contrary, if they're buying a lake house that's out of their price range, or they're buying a boat or something like that, if they're draining their 401k in order to make expenses like that happen, well, we're also going to be more likely to follow suit. And so it's just important to keep that in mind, right? It's not that we can't be friends with folks who think about the world differently, who handle money differently than we do, but just make it a habit to spend maybe more time with folks who handle their money well, and who will also motivate you to do the same.
Yeah. I just recently hung out with a friend who I hadn't seen in quite a while, and he
You have
had,
other friends, Joel?
I know, right? Shock, but
that's not allowed.
But he has a brand new Rivian SUV. We have talked on this show that there's like only 800 and something of them in existence. And
oh
so
my goodness.
It was pretty impressive to see. Like, I've been obsessed with Rivians for ever since I heard about them, basically. I think they're...
And now you're going to get one, right?
One of the most beautifully designed vehicles in the world. And so I was like, man, I'm excited to hang out with him, but I'm also excited to see his new car. And
they are dope.
I got a chance to ride in it, and I was like, man, if I hung out with this buddy too much, I would be so enticed to do to spend my money differently, to buy a fancy new car. But I actually walked away from that being like, man, it's, I'm not interested. I don't care anymore.
Like, I'm so glad that we're not closer. I'm so glad that
I made a vow not to see him again for at least two more years.
Yeah, there you go. Got to get your ratios in check.
Right. But it's, I mean, it's cool. But I totally understood after that hang how just spending more time together would lead me down this path. And so you have to be cognizant of who you're spending time with, because it does impact the decisions that you make. And part of that means, I think, we need to be making it a habit to talk about money more in general. And it is, like, it's obviously, it's a taboo topic for a lot of people. Most people try to avoid it. Most of your friends probably don't want to talk to you about money if you try to bring it up. But whether you're making it something like a formal monthly conversation amongst friends over a beer.
Like a money club.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I mean, however you want to.
You can even use that name. My feelings will be hurt. Feel
and
free.
It can be like formal or informal, like however you want to tackle it. But we would say, like, having money conversations is going to move the needle for you over time. So yeah, offer up an opinion, share a struggle, or discuss the money goal that you're trying to achieve this year with some people you care about, some people that are close to you. You might find encouragement, accountability, or insight that you'd otherwise be missing out on. But I think that's a habit that also has lasting impacts. The more we kind of avoid this topic, the more it's like an elephant in the room that we just like never ever broach the subject of, the more we relegate it to like never being spoken of, the less likely we are to make progress in our own lives, I think.
But
it just shows how uncomfortable we are with money as a whole.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, and while you, like, if you're listening to the show, like, there's a chance that you might make pretty decent decisions when it comes to your money. If you're not opting to talk about it with your friends who aren't listening to our show, there's a good chance that they're going to make poor decisions because of that. They say that like sunshine is the best disinfectant, right? And so in that way, we want to bring these financial conversations to light. And we talked a lot about this at, like, during the early days of our podcast.
And by the way, this does not mean beating your friend over the head with a Dave Ramsey book or something like that. But it does mean, like I said, there's all sorts of soft ways to get into
soft,
those discussions.
Casual ways to go about it. And we just want folks to talk more about money, because the more you talk about it, the more interesting it's going to become, and the more you'll be able to challenge each other to make wiser financial decisions. Like, there's a degree of accountability, and honestly, just the ability for you to provide a differing opinion. You know, like, somebody, they might be surrounded by their four or five people in their neighborhood, and they're being encouraged to make certain purchases in life because that's just what everybody in the neighborhood's doing. But what they really need is that frugal contrarian that you might be. That might be the role that you need to play in their life, and that's going to allow them to perhaps get much further along with the different financial goals that they've got in their life.
Yeah. I mean, I think the truth is, we're social beings, right? And there's a reason that lots of folks opt to work out at the gym instead of at home. There's a reason folks are willing to pay a ton of money to go to a concert or to go see, like, let's say an NFL playoff game, right? How expensive are Super Bowl tickets every year? They're not cheap.
No.
And part of that is not just seeing the game, but it's being around, like, a bunch of people cheering in the same direction that you are. And that can be kind of an experience. And I think the same is true of money progress, right? There's something magical about incorporating other humans, even as we're striving towards accomplishing distinctly personal and unique goals with our money. There's something about the accountability, but also, like, being able to make progress forward together. Yeah,
dude, absolutely. Like, I'm going to butcher, I don't have a specific quote here, but I think it was C.S. Lewis who actually was speaking about friendship in this way. I think it was him. And one of the things he said was that, like, what is at the core of a friendship is being able to stand next to somebody and for both of you to look at something and point to that and be like, oh, look at that. Isn't that awesome? To kind of have a shared interest or passion about something. You're basically both agreeing that the thing you're looking at is lovely.
Yeah.
And, you know, this sounds maybe a little too mushy and poetic, but you can also do that about money. Like, that is something that you can do with your friends, with your coworkers. And I think that's just super cool. Yeah. It's just really awesome.
And that doesn't mean lording your 401k balance over them.
No.
And saying,
yeah,
like, look at how awesome
that's
I'm
a total
doing.
Jerk, gross way of
yes,
doing it. You
there's
know?
Other way better ways of doing it. We've talked about that in the past. Maybe we'll link to that episode in the show notes. But yeah, you don't have to give even specific numbers. There's ways to have that money conversation without being like, look at my income, here's my pay stub.
Instead, you can talk about, instead of specific numbers, percentages. That's
yes,
a great way of talking about the general habit and the behavior without getting overly specific.
Sure, or goals, or maybe a piece of personal finance content you've come across that kind of changed your perspective on something. Those are good ways to initiate the conversation without making someone else who's not where you are feel like an idiot.
Exactly.
But another financial habit we would say would be important to implement this year in 2023 would be to write your goals down. because this habit really can make a massive change when it comes to actually taking action. If you're putting pen to paper, if you're outlining what you're working towards, the likelihood that you're going to prioritize that thing goes up substantially. Mm-hmm. There's something about like pen to paper and how it affects our memory. Like if you're listening to someone speak and you're taking notes, you're going to retain more information. And it's the same thing when you write down your goals. Like there's no waffling and guessing what you should be doing when extra money comes into your account. Let's say another stimulus check were to occur, unlikely, but let's say it did, or a tax refund. That's kind of similar for a lot of people. That's like an annual stimulus check that comes along. A lot of people make or get like a multi-$1,000 tax refund, and that is a way for you to jumpstart financial progress in your life. But being in tune with the goals to the point that you have committed them to writing is a method of personal accountability. It shows that you take your own hopes and dreams seriously. And like we said earlier, a lot of these habits can be implemented even if you're unsure about your larger money goals. But this one is a game changer once you've kind of started to figure those out, once you've decided where it is you want your money to go. Like writing that goal down, and it almost ensures that your money is going to follow suit.
That's right. But you also want to limit the number of goals that you're striving after as well, right? Because yeah, like successful financial nerds, they set goals, but not too many of them, because it's going to be hard to achieve 32 different goals that you've got set in 2023. In fact, the person I think who sets fewer goals is more likely to then accomplish the goals that they didn't call out from the outset, right? And so just simply by limiting your scope, by narrowing your focus, that laser-like attention on just like one, two, three different goals that you have on on the biggest wins that you want to see, that is going to translate to a higher success rate and to doing it more quickly, I think, so that you can then just move on to the other goals that you have more quickly. And one of the other things that Katie had talked about was basically implementing a plan to achieve these different goals, because we don't want you to just stop at writing down your goal, but literally write out some of the steps necessary in order to break down that big, somewhat overwhelming goal down into small bite-sized mm-hmm. actions. Write those and list those things, those steps out as well. So for instance, if you're thinking by the end of this year, I want to have a fully funded emergency fund set up. Cool. What does that even look like? That's a great goal to have.
I bet you can have 5, 6, 7 steps.
Oh,
that
easily.
It's going to take.
Absolutely.
And you can work backwards from the big goal.
Step one, track your expenses. Figure out how much it costs for you to survive on this planet over a 30-day period. Step two, multiply that by 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, depending on how many months of reserves that you want to have. But then beyond that, right, like figuring out how much you need to set aside, like divide that out by 12 so that you know that each paycheck, I want to make sure I set this amount of money aside. Mm-hmm. But figure out and literally start solving the problem, start cracking that nut now by not just writing out the goal, but some of the specific steps that are going to allow you to achieve that ultimate goal.
For sure. And like the truth is ultimately, Matt, like habits make or break us. And it's not that self-discipline is dumb or a waste of time, but thinking that greater levels of willpower are going to elevate us to where we want to be is kind of naive, right?
Sure.
It's one of those things where I've said that a lot over the years, like hoping that I would rise to the occasion.
You can't just will it into existence.
Right.
Like the emergency fund. Like, no, like there are some very practical steps as opposed to just being like, I got to figure that out.
Yes.
It's like, well, what does that mean? Like,
but that is a response, if we're
paper,
all honest. We've all had at different times.
Sure.
Especially on the subject of money, where it feels like we need more information, where we can always say like, we don't know enough, or there's all sorts of excuses we can give for not doing the thing that we need to do and for not implementing the tactics that are going to help us get where we want to be. But like we would say, implementing just a few of these habits is going to put you on the path to progress,
making
it so much more likely that you're going to take strides and you're going to take them more quickly. You don't even have to have specific goals like accruing $1 million net worth by the time you're 45 or something like that. It doesn't have to be that intense or that ridiculous, but that those goals are going to come into focus as you habitually make smart moves and gain confidence. I think that's actually going to give you the confidence to make and set goals that are bigger and more audacious. And a quote that stuck out to me, Matt, from James Clear, actually, he said,
tell it to me,
action relieves anxiety. And I think the habits that we choose to implement are directly under our control. And implementing even just one or two of those could really kickstart a financial transformation in our lives. So action is the key. Getting these habits started, at least a few of them, is, we might look back at the end of this year and say, wow, those three habits took me a long way. They took me a long way towards the goals I wanted to reach.
That's right, man. Yeah, hopefully folks have been encouraged to take some practical steps, steps that lead to action when it comes to their personal finances. Let's shift back to the beer. During this episode, you and I enjoyed a liquid hop magma.
Austin Powers reference,
there
right?
There you go. Yeah. What were your thoughts on this beer?
So this one leaned in the fruity direction. I would say an IPA that's definitely more fruit forward, even though it doesn't have fruit in the making of this beer. It's like literally, that's what I'm all constantly amazed at, hops and how different combinations of those hops can create a completely different flavor profile. And this one
kind of makes me think of, is it the different jelly beans where they've got all the different flavors, but by the different combinations of putting them together, you can make like different dishes.
That's right.
That's kind of what I think of with hops. It's like, combine this hop with this hop with this hop, and all of a sudden tastes like a key lime pie.
That's true. I mean, yeah, and that's what's crazy about these little green, they look like Brussels sprouts, but somehow they make beers taste fantastic. Mm-hmm. And this one was like more passion fruit notes that I'm getting. And
way more citrusy.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I will say I liked it. It was
fantastic.
And this is probably even more up your alley because you like the sweet, fruity
stuff. It's not like an orange creamsicle or anything like that, but it definitely kind of had those smooth, creamy vibes going on. And this is our last beer that we are going to enjoy from Mutation. But more than anything, man, I am just glad that we have yet another fantastic craft brewery here in the city of Atlanta.
The merrier.
The more the merrier, for sure. The guys over at Mutation are doing a great job, and we still look forward to heading up. I mean, they just opened up just a few months ago.
We'll go soon.
It hasn't been that long.
I will say.
But we haven't been there yet.
We need to make it a habit to go to more breweries. But we've already made it a habit to drink beer on the show, and we've had something close to, 500 beers on How to Money now.
Yeah, boy.
In our five plus years of existence. So
it makes it sound like we're maniacs, but we're not.
When you think of, that's the thing, is like when you break it down into smaller increments, that's 2 beers a week. All right, guys, that's not intense. That's not overwhelming, but we are thankful that we get to do this job every single week, that we get to hang out with each other, talk about money, and really it's you listeners who make this podcast possible. So thank you, and we wish you the best of success this year in forming solid money habits that are going to change your future. That's what we want to see for you.
That's right. And we would love for you to hear our next episode, which comes out on Friday. So if you are not already a subscriber, mash that subscribe button so you don't miss the next episode. But if you are a long time listener and you haven't left us a solid review yet, head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Give us a solid rating, solid review over there. And a big thank you in advance for that. We'll make sure to link to any of the different resources that we mentioned up on our website at howtomoney.com. Joel, that's going to be it, buddy, for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.